All righty, let's go ahead and get started right on time. We've got a lot of material to cover today. If you're here for this session, it is BRK2047, Explore Microsoft SharePoint Server 2016 and beyond. For those of you in the very back, if you'd like to upgrade to Comfort or First Class and get a little bit more leg room, there's plenty of seating available up here. For those of you in the exit row, can you comply with the pilot's instructions in the event that one of our demos crashes? Everybody gives me a good thumbs up. All right, great. So I'm Bill Baer. I'm a product manager in our SharePoint product group. I focus on a number of things on a day-to-day basis. Of those things is our SharePoint server releases, our hybrid programs and strategies, our migration programs and strategies, and then I do some part-time work on extensibility as well. You can connect with me via Twitter, LinkedIn, TechNet, a number of different places you can find me. So today's session, exploring SharePoint Server 2016 and beyond, is going to be a three-part session effectively. The first thing we'd like to talk about is just to reintroduce you to SharePoint Server 2016. For some of you, it may be meeting SharePoint Server 2016 for the first time, albeit we did release it earlier in the year, in March, and then subsequently in May, we made it generally available. But we're gonna start the session with a little bit of a recap of what SharePoint Server 2016 is, our guiding principles, what led us to this release, how this release differentiates, both from an engineering perspective, as well as a product perspective from prior releases of SharePoint. The second half of the session, we're gonna dive into a little bit of roadmap. So we're gonna talk about what you may have seen and show what you may have seen us talk about on Monday. So we put together a blog post to talk about feature packs. So we're gonna answer all your questions about what a feature pack is. How do I get a feature pack? Where do they come from? What are these things? What features are in them? Is there gonna be another one? So we'll talk a little bit about feature packs and part of our roadmap. And then we'll switch gears and we'll talk a little bit about some of the cloud-enabled strategy that we have as we think about SharePoint Server 2016 and beyond. So with that as context, I have this slide here because it looks really nice, so we're gonna move beyond it. Now actually what this slide is we released to web SharePoint Server 2016 on March 14th of 2016. That's what you previously knew as RTM. RTM was released to manufacturing, but we don't stamp DVDs anymore, so RTW is the acronym we use in its place. The build number is 4351.1000, so that's an easy way to tell if you're in an RTM release of SharePoint Server 2016. And then the size of it actually matters, 3.23 gigabytes. And keep that in the back of your head as we talk about updates and some of the different strategies that we've used. So when we first started thinking about SharePoint Server 2016 a couple of years ago, we had a set of guiding principles that really informed our decisions as we built the product. What we wanted to focus on was three categories of investment areas of 2016: infrastructure, compliance, and what we call experiences. On the infrastructure side, the idea was is we wanted to enable you to deploy in a way very similar to the way that we manage Office 365, so you can be more efficient at less cost. We wanted you to be able to maximize your existing infrastructure, have flexible deployments through hybrid and other investments. Some of the things that we've done in that space is we introduced our new streamlined topology model, something you're probably familiar with as MinRoll, as the concept that we introduced. We improved our search scale by 2 times, up to 500 million items. We enabled you to patch SharePoint Server 2016 with minimal or no downtime through our zero downtime patching model that we'll talk a little bit about during the course of this session as well. On flexibility, again, MinRoll for a architecture that's representative of the way that we run SharePoint. So the more prescriptive we can be for you, the better you can run SharePoint and position yourself in a similar way as we run SharePoint in the cloud. We added support for the latest generation of both SQL and Windows servers, 2016 being those, in addition to supporting Windows Azure. And we actually published and republished a SharePoint 2016 trial in the Azure Platform Gallery. On the cloud connected side, that's our hybrid vision, and effectively what that's all about is enabling you to bring cloud capability back to the server. Our hybrid model in the past enabled you to bring your server to the cloud. Effectively, it was driven by migration. And now the way that we think about hybrid is it shouldn't be driven by migration. It should enable you to just take advantage of cloud capabilities. And that's going to be an important concept that we talk about as we move throughout the course of today's content. On the experiences side, we wanted to improve mobile access to SharePoint and make that better for you. We wanted to improve your ability to integrate with Office 365, and we really wanted to make document storage and collaboration more people-centric by introducing some new concepts and ideas in that category. There's a couple of spotlight capabilities that we did. One, we improved page load performance. That was an accrual of some of the work that we've done in Office 365, so we really did a lot of work to improve page load performance in SharePoint 2016. We improved the way that you share via a new sharing model. We also added some new rapid provisioning logic for fast site creation when you think about things like OneDrive for Business, aka My Sites. We also improved the browsing experience on mobile devices, and we introduced some new APIs for you to be able to instrument as well. The OneDrive Files API V1 is representative of some of those new API investments that you'll find inside of SharePoint Server 2016. On the compliance side, we also introduced some new features and capabilities about compliance. So this is our third value pillar or investment pillar, the guiding principle, the last one of those three. We wanted to enable you to keep your information more secure on your on-prem servers. We wanted to give you greater access control, but we really wanted to build compliance into the product in a way that doesn't impact the way your users work. Most compliance capabilities are intrusive on the way the information worker interacts with SharePoint. So we wanted to build a non-intrusive form of compliance controls and then natively bring those into the product. Spotlighting some of those is we improved sensitive content discovery via e-discovery. So we introduced this concept of sensitive information types that effectively go out and it uses a combination of pattern matching and regular expressions and proximity scans to be able to report content that does not comply with one of those classification IDs. We'll take a brief look at those momentarily. We also wanted to enable you to connect yourself to the cloud. A lot of people want to do hybrid deployments. Maybe they just have an Office 365 tenancy that they're using, as well as on-premises SharePoint. So we wanted to introduce some capabilities that allow you to bring those together. We wanted to support a lot of the things that people have been doing with SharePoint from an encryption perspective. So TDE is one of those things that you've always been able to do with SharePoint, transparent data encryption, and SQL Server. We built in some policy templates, and then we also added some document hold and deletion centers to enable that compliance pillar. Now, the important thing about SharePoint Server 2016, or the important question to ask, is the cloud is here. The cloud is mainstream. So what does that mean from an on-premises perspective? Many of you are probably in the room today because you're either running on-prem SharePoint or you're looking to run on-prem SharePoint. Perhaps there's a variety of reasons that prohibit you from adopting SharePoint online. It could be data sovereignty, data sensitivity concerns, corporate regulatory compliance, and investment in customizations that can't easily be transitioned to the cloud. Some of you may not be interested in the cloud at this particular point. So really on this side, we have to ask ourselves both asking, you have to ask yourselves as much as we have to ask ourselves is the cloud is here. How do we manage our on-premises strategy with the advent of the cloud? So what does it mean for you from an IT strategy perspective? What does it mean for SharePoint now that the cloud is mainstream? The questions are we gonna continue to invest in it? Are cloud capabilities gonna make themselves available through the server itself? For what scenario should you use on-premises SharePoint or use SharePoint in the cloud? So there's three basic paths that answer that question. One is just SharePoint Server 2016 natively. That's a crawl path. Two is feature packs. That's a walk path. And then we have a run path, which is hybrid. So really to position yourself in a way that enables you to take the advantage of the latest cloud capabilities on-premises, some of the ones that you've been seeing launched recently. So you've probably seen the new lists experience. You've probably seen the new libraries experience. You've probably used the next generation sync client. Perhaps you have seen some of the other things that we've introduced, some of the modern page concepts
that make themselves visible via Office 365 groups, but you're on premises today. So how do you position yourself to take advantage of those capabilities as they exist on the cloud, even though you're running on-prem? And that's where the crawl, walk, run comes from. And we'll talk about what crawl, walk, run is. So first, we're going to talk about the crawl phase, which is SharePoint Server 2016, our guiding principles, what separates it from its predecessors, and how that natively enables you to take advantage of capabilities that you didn't have in the past. Then we're going to move into roadmap, talk about feature packs, the walk path, and how you can take advantage of newer capabilities that were accruing from Office 365. And then lastly, we'll talk about the run path, which is the hybrid or cloud coexistence path, and a little bit of roadmap around those. So if you read the blog on Monday morning at 7:50 Pacific Daylight Time or 10:50 Eastern Time, you probably saw a blog post that says SharePoint Server 2016 cloud-born and future-proof. So what do we mean by cloud-born and future-proof? Well, the first thing that we started out with was a concept of a converged code base. And to talk a little bit about that, I'd like to introduce Troy Starr, one of our longtime engineers on our SharePoint engineering team, to provide a little bit of context around what a converged code base means, both for us as well as what it means for you.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Everyone, Troy. I've been in the SharePoint team since 2002, so it's great to see SharePoint kind of grow over the years and to be where it's come today. So when we think about converged code base, we have to sort of go back and think about how did we used to build the SharePoint product? Well, in previous releases, you know, we come out about every, 2 to 3 years, we release a new version. So for about the first year, year and a half of that, we would actually spend the time coding the new features. Then for the next year, year and a half, we would then spend the time actually getting the thing to work. We would actually do all the validation, all the testing, fixing all those bugs. And the question is, you know, when you do that, like, how much time are you spending and are you being the most efficient with it? So for example, when we deploy the new builds into our internal document environments, especially in the beginning, those were really, really tough times. It would take a couple months to deploy a new build. There'd be a lot of bruised knuckles. It was really, really hard to turn that crank because the build quality was not really high in those early builds. So when we started thinking about how we would do it for the 2016 release, we actually asked ourselves, is that how we want to do it going forward? We could do that again, but is that the most efficient way? So then we think about, well, what are we doing with SharePoint Online? In SharePoint Online, we have millions of customers using the code base every day. We have new builds getting deployed every day. So then we thought, well, what if we take the actual SharePoint Online code base and make that be the starting point for SharePoint 2016? So instead of sort of cherry picking what kind of like new features in SPO that we had, bug fixes in SPO, and trying to port them over to the on-prem code base, let's just start with the SharePoint Online code base. And the result has been tremendously successful. With our new combined code base, we were actually able to deploy new on-prem builds into our internal dogfood environments on a weekly cadence. The crank has been turning so much faster now. Devs can actually see their changes show up in just a matter of days. The reliability has been really impressive, and it was really a great choice that we made here, not only for us and our productivity and our efficiency, but also for the quality that you're seeing in the final product. And now let's talk about some of the cloud accrued capabilities. So you see some of these listed here, and we include things like, you know, the new mobile and touch experiences, things like durable links, so that you know, when you have a file in your document library and somebody renames it or moves it, now if you sent that link to somebody else, that link might have been broken. Well, not with SharePoint 2016. When you combine SharePoint 2016 and Office Online Server, our links are now durable. They survive renames, they survive moves. So that link is good even after that happens. And talk about some more things for compliance, so bring it back to Bill.
Yeah, great, thanks. So basically at the end of the day, if you think about SharePoint Server 2016, and then a few slides ago I talked about this idea of crawl. So the cloud is here. What does it mean for me on premises? Well, you can take advantage of cloud capabilities in one of three ways. You can take the crawl path, which is SharePoint Server 2016. And all of that starts with this concept of the converged code base, because you're natively getting cloud capability immediately because of the idea of a converged code base. The next thing that we decided to do beyond that was, what capabilities exist in SharePoint Online since November of 2012 that we can bring back to our server release natively? So we did things like Troy talked about, durable links. We did things like mobile and touch, fast site creation, improvements in search, large file support. All of these things have been in SharePoint Online for a couple of years. So we were able to natively bring those things back by virtue of converging code bases and then making some decision points about what we should bring back to the server. So the crawl path is you get cloud value immediately, not only on the business side, but also on the infrastructure side. So looking at that, the first part of this session today, again, is a recap of SharePoint Server 2016. A very short recap for those of you that aren't familiar with some of the capabilities that exist in that particular product. So if I go ahead and switch over, I'm just going to walk through some of these very briefly. We're not going to spend a lot of time demonstrating what's in market because we want to get to the meat of the presentation, which is the next portion on roadmap and feature packs. So here I have a SharePoint Server 2016 site. I've got a farm that's hosted in Azure. I've got a site collection here, a number of different site collections. And you can immediately recognize some of the things that we accrued from Office 365 back to the server natively as part of this converged code base concept. The first thing is if you look at the document library that I have here, documents with two documents under it, you'll notice that simple control, that simple set of controls that sits right above the document library. The new button, the upload button, the sync button, share, and then the more button. Effectively, what we learned as part of running SharePoint 2016 in Office 365 is that we have the ability to do A/B testing. We can experiment with different user groups. We can give some the simple controls and we can give others the placebo. In this case, the placebo was the traditional toolbar that you had available to you inside of a document library, the ribbon. So what we found is when users were presented with the simple controls versus the placebo, they were 50% more likely to actually upload files and collaborate within a document library versus when they had the ribbon available to them. So the beauty part about SharePoint Server 2016 and us accruing capability back to it is that we were able to figure out how users work and the things that actually make them productive and then bring them natively back to the server. So in this particular case, it facilitated greater collaboration. It also enables you to do a lot of simple things that users wanted to be able to do directly from the menu, to share a file, to sync a file, or if they needed more advanced capabilities, we could bury those under the more menu. The ribbon itself was too complex. It was riddled with a number of options that a typical information worker didn't need, or they didn't resonate with them. So we really simplified that. So this is a direct accrual from Office 365. As Troy mentioned, the other thing that we did was we introduced the concept of durable links by virtue of supporting Office Online Server with SharePoint. So I have a link to a PowerPoint presentation here that I could click on. It's going to load in Office Online Server. But one of the things that people commonly do in a day-to-day basis is they rename files. So I went ahead and copied the URL as that PowerPoint presentation was loading. So let's just go ahead and do what most individuals do inside of SharePoint on a day-to-day basis. They call the file final. This is one of the things that they typically do. Unfortunately, they've already sent out a sharing link to 150,000 different people, but then later on they decided to rename the file. In the past, that would result in an email deluge because people are saying, I can't access the file doesn't exist, SharePoint's giving me an error, and we all know that the error messages in SharePoint that you get as an information worker are extremely productive error messages. So every user understands what a correlation ID is and that they need to go to the ULS log in order to diagnose what went wrong. But in this particular case, let me go ahead and paste that same URL in there. So I'll just go ahead and drop it in there, and it still works. So the reason it still works, even though I renamed the file, is because in the past, the link would take a dependency on the file name itself. Now, as you upload documents, each document is given an identifier, and that identifier is used as a component of the URL. So documents are looked up by ID versus by being looked up by name. So irregardless of the name, users can actually discover files. These are some of the user improvements. The other thing that we've done is we talked about how we introduced a new mobile and touch view. So in SharePoint 2016, I can just append the URL with my mobile param, set it to true, and you get that experience that's indicative of what you had inside of OneDrive for Business and Office 365. So this was another direct accrual from cloud back. So now I can navigate in here. I can move around between my applications. much as you could inside of Office 365. That's another feature that we accrued directly back, that we cherry-picked from the cloud and brought back to the server. On the compliance side, we also introduced a compliance center into SharePoint Server 2016. That's another feature from a compliance perspective that existed inside of Office 365, so the concept of DLP. So you can perform DLP policy management actions directly from a single compliance center inside of SharePoint Server 2016. So I can actually go in and I can create a DLP policy. In my particular case, I already have a couple of DLP policies created. I have a Contoso classification policy. I have a new DLP card policy. As you can see, each one's a little bit different. They're all based on this concept of sensitive information types. If I wanted to create a new DLP policy, I could simply hit new item. I could choose the policy that makes the most sense for me. Maybe it's UK financial data. It gives me an example of what that means. I can come down, specify the number of items to be discovered before the policy is triggered. I can then optionally send an email report to my compliance administrator if I wanted to. And then I can notify users with a policy tip, but I can also provide an override to the document creator or anybody who has the modify permissions to that document. So again, this is an accrual directly from Office 365 back to the server itself. Now, what does it look like when I configure a policy and there's an item in violation? Well, you'll notice in the document library, there's a little icon that shows that something's wrong with the file. If I hover over the icon, it'll tell the user that access to the item is blocked. It conflicts with the policy in their organization. That's great, provides a little bit of information. If they want to learn more, they can simply click on the document icon and it'll bring up the additional information that's pertinent as to why that particular file is blocked. So it gives them the base error message. It tells them who can actually access the file. If the file owner is the person browsing that file, they actually have the opportunity to open the item and resolve the issue. And then we actually tell them what the issue was and when it was last scanned. So me as the owner of the file, I could quickly go in and just simply resolve that particular issue and make it go away. But the idea here is people-centric compliance. When I talked about compliance shouldn't be intrusive, the way that we were able to bring it back from Office 365 to the server is in a non-intrusive way. It's very clear as to what's wrong with the file, and we're giving them clear information as to how they should manage it moving forward. So consider that kind of the recap of some of the people-centric compliance investments that we've made, some of the business user or experience investments that we've made, and we'll now talk about some of the infrastructure investments that we've made before we kick into the second half of the presentation, which is looking at roadmap and feature packs. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and move back to the PowerPoint presentation. I'd like to invite Troy back up to talk a little bit about MinRoll and some of the infrastructure concepts that fill in that cloud-inspired architecture component of our.
Thanks, Bill. So MinRoll, one of the big new releases that we've had in 2016. What is it? Well, MinRoll is a new role-based server topology that's designed to simplify the life of the SharePoint farm administrator. So what are the roles we have here? Well, we have a couple. First off, we have the front-end role. The front-end role focuses on the user and interactive scenarios. It runs all the services needed to respond to end-user requests, things like page rendering, service application endpoints that are actually used to render those pages, subscription settings service, sandbox project, all those kinds of services. We have another role called the application role, and it focuses more on the background tasks happening in the farm, things like your timer jobs that are running, things like being the crawl target for your search crawls, things that you don't want to cause front-end performance to suffer from and have end users have increased latency for. We also have a caching role, and that role runs our distributed cache service. And finally, not pictured here, we have a search role where all of your search components are focused on that role. So why do we do this? As Bill mentioned earlier, one of the big focuses for SharePoint going forward is simplification. And that applies not just to end users, but to administrators as well. In the past, SharePoint topology could be a very complex topic for administrators. You might hire some consultants to help you out. One consultant may say you should do it this way. Another consultant could say you should do it this other way. It could be pretty confusing. With MinRoll, it really simplifies that experience. Now that it's role-based, you as the farm administrator can focus on what you want to be running in your farm and not worry about where it's going to run. MinRoll is going to handle those decisions for you. And the great thing about MinRoll is we've actually optimized the code for the MinRoll topology. We do things like minimizing latency through what we call Go Local. What Go Local means is that if there's a service that a page needs to access to render, it sees if that service is available on the local box. And if so, it makes sure to always contact that service on the local box. That reduces intra-farm connections and keeps that latency as small as possible. Another benefit of that is higher reliability in your farm. With that Go Local concept, if a service is behaving poorly, that behavior is localized just to that local box. And therefore, you're actually isolating poor behaving servers from the rest of the farm. So now it's easier to find out if a server is behaving poorly, take that machine out of rotation, and have it not affect the rest of the farm. MinRoll is also self-healing. If MinRoll detects that a service is not running on a server that it should be running, or if a service is running on a server where it shouldn't be running, MinRoll will automatically correct that behavior. Once a day, it will scan the farm, look for those issues, and automatically fix them up. Now, you as the administrator have full control over that experience. You can have the schedule change to be more often or less often. You can set it to not do the automatic fix-up, but simply notify you. You have full control, but again, by default, MinRoll will do the right thing for you and your farm. And finally, MinRoll is also adaptable. You can decide, as the farm sort of grows or contracts, that you might want to sort of reallocate which servers are assigned to which roles. MinRoll provides easy role conversion, so you can have one server be a front end one day, have it be an application the other day. And next up, let's talk about zero downtime patching. So the dream is real, folks. We finally have zero downtime patching for on-prem. What does that mean? You're going to get full read and write uptime in the farm while patching and upgrading, including while your databases are being upgraded. So did everybody hear that? I want to say that one more time. Full read-write uptime in your farm while you're patching and upgrading. So how do we do this? How do we make that happen? Well, first off, you do need to have a high availability farm deployed to make this work. That means that if you're running a single box SharePoint farm, which I know nobody here is doing other than just, you know, play around a little bit, right? You're not going to get that benefit. So you do need to have high availability. Now, what's great about this is that this is another place where MinRoll makes your life so much easier. You don't have to have MinRoll to have high ability in SharePoint 2016, and therefore you don't have to have MinRoll to do zero downtime patching, but it makes it so much easier. Because with MinRoll, you have consistent roles, consistent farm topologies, and it's very easy to understand whether you're an HA or not. We've also done work to reduce the amount of time it takes to patch a farm. Things like consolidating our update packages. Before, in previous releases, you know, we had many different update packages you'd have to download to fully patch. Now we've brought it down to just two packages. We have a core package, which has all the non-localized files in there, and a language pack package, which basically has all the updates for all the different language files. So just with those two packages, you can fully patch your farm for that given month. And the amount of time it takes to patch is reduced as a result. And now, we'll hand it back off to Bill to talk about our new feature packs that we just announced.
Great, thank you, Troy. And for the audience, I should have mentioned this in the beginning, but I'll mention it now that we're moving into our roadmap and second half of the conversation, now that we've recapped the value of SharePoint Server 2016 as we shipped it back in March and then subsequently made it generally available in May. So if you have any questions, please do ask them throughout the course of the presentation. I'm not sure if Troy may or may not have time after the session. Unfortunately, I have a session immediately following this one. And for those of you that have been here in Atlanta, you'll know that the convention center is big enough to where you have to pass through customs to get to one end from the other. So I will have to run right after the session. But let's go ahead and talk about one of my favorite things when it comes to SharePoint Server 2016, and probably the reason why most of you are in the room today. At our virtual launch event in San Francisco this past May, we talked about feature packs very briefly. The concept of bringing the ability to us to deliver to you innovation that we pull from Office 365, as well as innovation that we derive through other means and channels. So what feature packs do is they allow us to solve a long-time problem that we've had with earlier SharePoint releases. We used to have a 2 to 3 year release cadence, and we still have a 2 to 3 year release cadence. But unfortunately, in the past, that meant you weren't getting a server release for 2 to 3 years. Unfortunately, at the same time, the cloud was accelerating in respect to its capabilities. So newer and newer things were being delivered to Office 365, to SharePoint Online, that weren't making it back to on-premises. By the time they did make it back to on-premises, they were 3 years too late. So you were effectively 6 years behind because we've already moved forward 3 more years from the point at which we could give them to you. The other challenge was is if we did find something compelling to deliver to you, we didn't have a vehicle to do that. We could do service packs, we could do cumulative updates, but traditionally we don't bring features through those vehicles. That's for bug fixes, reliability fixes, security fixes. So we had a couple of different channels we could do it through, but those weren't the right channels. And we didn't really have a mechanism to allow us to deliver innovation to you at a very rapid cadence. So we recognized there was an opportunity there. There was an opportunity to solve the 2 to 3 year release cadence problem. There was an opportunity to solve the problem that led to you being behind many features that the cloud was because we developed there first. So what we decided to do is let's see if we can accelerate our delivery of features to our on-premises customers, much in the same way that we deliver features to our customers inside of Office 365. How can we pull those things together and make our on-premises customers feel more like an Office 365 customer and that you're not being left behind because we're focused so much on the cloud? So previously, we effectively had two ways to release new features to you. You either waited 2 to 3 years for a major release, or you waited for one of our service packs, which was delivered on more or less an annual basis. Now, unfortunately, if you think about what that 2 to 3 years means for a server release, we start planning those server releases 1 to 2 years in advance. So we make decisions based on, say, technology trends in 2011 that actually make it into a server that we ship in 2015. So it's already 4 years out of date by the time it gets in your hands. So this delivers to us an opportunity, feature packs do, to bring things back to you. So we came up with a solution. We decided to make 2016 as a goal vibrant and evolving. We wanted to continue to evolve it, and we wanted to make it vibrant in the same way that we service Office 365, that we service SharePoint Online. So we can bring that cloud-first innovation back to you in the same way that when you click the first release button, we can get innovation to you more rapidly as well. The goals that we decided to focus on is, one, we wanted to deliver web experience improvements. It's 2016. The SharePoint user experience isn't representative of 2016. It's representative of Portal Server 2001. The structure, the layout of the pages, they're the same effectively. The technology has changed. Of course, they've gotten faster. Of course, you can do more things with them. They're more extensible. They're more flexible. But the underlying structure of the page really hasn't changed in the way that they're laid out. So we wanted to deliver web experience improvements to modernize SharePoint. Unfortunately, a lot of those web experience improvements didn't exist in the cloud yet, so we couldn't put them in the server. Some of them did exist in the cloud at the time we shipped the server, but they weren't baked enough to bring into the server. So we opted to hold on to some of those. We then wanted to focus on our developer story. We wanted to bring a set of APIs to our developers so you could build portable solutions that you could bring from on-premises to the cloud, or conversely, from cloud to on-premises. The first one we introduced was the OneDrive file API, natively into SharePoint 2016 at RTM. Through Feature Pack 1, we've extended that. You probably also have heard of a thing called the SharePoint Framework, and we talked about how we're going to bring that to on-premises as well. So our developer story, we want to evolve in the same way as the user experience story. We want to be able to deliver hybrid migration improvements, so we needed a vehicle to do that. And most importantly, they listened to us. What does that mean? We wanted to take those top items from user voice and actually build them into the product. So what do our customers actually want inside of SharePoint? So we use user voice as a pulse to tell us the features that you want. So if you think that the user voice thing is just a vacuum and a dead end and we don't do anything with it, we actually do. We take the feedback that we get, and we actually determine whether or not it's something we can put inside of the server. That being said, what did we ship in Feature Pack 1? So on May 4th, we said Feature Pack 1 will be available in calendar year 2017. We're 6 months ahead of schedule in giving you Feature Pack 1. So we actually accelerated the schedule of delivering accelerated innovation to you. We focused on three things this time. We focused on the information worker. We wanted to bring the latest in OneDrive for Business user experiences back to the server itself. So all of the things that we've been doing with the OneDrive UX inside of Office 365, we wanted to bring back. That's a modern site that's based on today's JavaScript and web templating frameworks. So it's HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript built using those same principles that the SharePoint framework provides you. We also introduced custom app launcher tiles. On the IT side, we've made some enhancements and improvements around MinRoll that Troy will speak to, because we heard your feedback relating to MinRoll and the size of the farms that you were relegated to with our original MinRoll design. We're also introducing hybrid auditing and hybrid taxonomy. So now if you're moving to Office 365 or you have a hybrid design, you can have unified auditing that exists between cloud and on-premises. You also can have taxonomy that exists between cloud and on-premises through hybrid taxonomy. And then for developers, we're bringing in the OneDrive API V2. Lastly, moving back to the IT side, because this is an important one, for the first time in SharePoint's history, you can actually figure out if an administrator did something to break something. So that's surprisingly enough, I don't know how we overlooked it for 15 years, but surprisingly enough, that one was based explicitly on user voice, the MinRoll enhancements user voice. So we actually listened, and when we went to user voice after we shipped the server, we saw this, hey, I need to be able to log the actions taken by an administrator. Guess it's a no-brainer, and we just overlooked the importance of having that there. So what's in the OneDrive for Business user experience? Basically, it's the new modern user experience that exists in Office 365 that we're bringing back to SharePoint Server 2016 through Feature Pack 1. It adds move and copy, it adds the information panel, it adds the ability to rename files inline, and it's fast and responsive. So it's actually responsive. SharePoint has never done well on mobile devices. As we bring these innovations back to the server, they'll look much better on mobile devices. We're also introducing custom tiles, so you're probably familiar with the app launcher by now if you've been running SharePoint Server 2016. Office 365 has a concept called the waffle, or the app launcher. In the upper left-hand corner, you can click on that and you get easy access to all of your applications. In this particular case, we took that triple hamburger and we brought it back to SharePoint Server 2016 natively. Now you can actually create custom tiles inside of the app launcher. We'll take a look at those here in a moment as well. On MinRoll improvements, I'm going to invite Troy up to talk about what we've done there to simplify MinRoll for you.
Awesome. Okay, so, can you hear me? There we go. All right, so with MinRoll, we talked about the roles that we had earlier, and there were four core roles: front-end, application, search, and distributed cache. So if you wanted to have a minimum MinRoll topology, you needed four servers. If you want to have high availability, you had to double that, so you needed eight servers. Some people came and said to us, hey, we may not be able to actually have eight servers in our farm. We live in the real world. And that's fine. We live in the real world, too. So we said, great, we hear that feedback. We want to have MinRoll be available to all of our customers across the entire range. So what did we do? We provided a new set of roles introduced in this feature pack one that actually combine two of those roles together to create two additional roles. So we combine the front-end and distributed cache roles together and the application and search roles together to create these two new roles. The original four roles are also still available for customers with larger scale farms, but these new roles now allow MinRoll to be used for small and medium-sized farms. And the great thing about this is that you can actually mix and match the server roles in a farm. So you can have some roles from the original set of roles, or some servers with the original set of roles, other servers using the new shared roles, and that way we can fill the entire spectrum of small, medium, and large-scale farms with MinRoll.
Good auditing. So we also are introducing hybrid auditing. So I already told you about administrative actions logging. We're also introducing a hybrid concept as well that we call hybrid auditing. It's going to be in a preview state when you get your hands on Feature Pack 1, but effectively your SharePoint 2016 on-prem user activity logs can be uploaded to Office 365, and then you can leverage the reports through the audit report search capabilities of the Office 365 Protection Center. So within the Protection Center itself, you can go to audit log search, and there's a variety of pre-built reports that exist inside of the Protection Center that you can now leverage against your on-premises audit logs. So a great example of is you can detect file and folder actions that users are taking against files and folders. Did they check out a file? Did they copy a file? Did they move or restore a file? Did they discard a file checkout? Did they delete a file checkout? So really, if you're focused on compliance in your organization, this is a great set of tooling that'll enable you to do that. You can also detect sharing activity amongst a number of other reports. So the hybrid auditing feature gives you great insight via Office 365 about how your users are using SharePoint Server 2016 on premises. There was a question up here in the front row. I'll go ahead and repeat the question for you so you don't have to move. So the question was, is with hybrid auditing, would this be exposed to site collection administrators, or is it limited to IT, or AKA the farm administrator? So the way that hybrid auditing works is it aggregates and ingests, Office 365 ingests all of your audit activity from SharePoint Server 2016 on premises. In order to view those reports, you need to be a tenant administrator so you can get into the compliance center to view those. So they wouldn't be available to site collection administrators unless you make them all tenant administrators. So this would be more of a function for IT to be able to use. Did you want to talk about hybrid taxonomy?
Can you hear me now? Awesome. All right. So hybrid taxonomy. So today we have the ability to have taxonomy on-prem and in the cloud, but they haven't been able to be unified before. Well, now we can actually have a unified taxonomy story. So the great thing here is you can actually ingest all of the taxonomy data from on-prem into the cloud. And now cloud is the one that's kind of maintaining your taxonomy. And with regular syncs, we keep the taxonomy and metadata used in the cloud and on-prem aligned.
So that's a big investment for us because we heard the feedback that one of the limiting factors of most of our hybrid topologies was the fact that your terms, your term sets, and all of those were unable to be used inside of Office 365. For those familiar with the issue, the reason is because all of those terms that you create on premises, while they have a friendly name, it seems apparent that you should be able to just create that same term inside of Office 365 and your document would retain those. Unfortunately, while the friendly name is great, we're SharePoint, and as SharePoint, we use GUIDs for everything, or GUIDs, however you opt to pronounce it. So we don't actually look up the terms and apply the terms based on their friendly name, we apply them based on their GUID. Each term has a unique GUID. So even if you create the same friendly name in Office 365, it's perceived as a separate term, so it doesn't automatically apply itself. Hybrid auditing solves a lot of those problems. There was a question right up here up front. Oh, great, just answered it. I knew you were gonna ask. So the next one is administrative actions logging, which really enables you to detect and report on actions that are taken by an administrator within SharePoint Server 2016. And again, this is something you haven't been able to do before, unfortunately. So your administrators in the past have had carte blanche access to SharePoint on premises. They could perform effectively any action that they wanted, but those actions were completely transparent to anybody. Now that's typically great when you have more than one farm administrator, because if you're the one that broke the farm, you can always point to the next person that's a farm administrator, and there was no basis for them to say that they didn't do it, so they could neither confirm nor deny that they were the person that took that action, because no proof of that action actually existed. Well, now it does. So that's great news if you only have one central administrator. It's bad news if you have two, because now you can't blame your office mate for all the problems that exist inside of SharePoint. You also can't blame SharePoint for the problems that you created that exist inside of SharePoint, because we'll know if you created them. So with that said, let's go ahead and take a quick look at some of the things that we're doing inside of Feature Pack 1. So we've got a very early look at some of these capabilities. So I'm just going to go ahead and move back to my SharePoint server. So here we are, SharePoint Server 2016, right where we left off. So we started with the RTM build, and we walked our way through it. But now let's see what Feature Pack 1 will bring. The first thing I talked about is custom tiles. So here we have a set of tiles. In this particular configuration, it's hybrid. Hybrid means that it's going to pull all of my Office 365 services into the app launcher inside of SharePoint Server 2016. But you'll notice on the far end, I have this thing called Contoso Tools. Now, that's a more or less interesting one. So where did Contoso Tools come from, and where does Contoso Tools go? Well, Contoso Tools came from the custom tiles. And where does it go? It goes anywhere I want. So let's say you want to extend the app launcher now on premises inside of SharePoint Server 2016. You obviously, for those of you that have used Office 365, you probably by now know that you can create custom tiles in Office 365. Now we're giving you the capability to do it on premises as well. So custom tiles are based on a list called custom tiles. And within that custom tiles list, you can actually simply create tiles by creating a new list item. So here's my Contoso Tools tile. It's got the name, the URL, and the icon URL. The icon's the little box I had in my tile. But if I want a new custom tile, I can just say new item, and I can call this Ignite 2016. I can put it seventh in the order. So you can actually dictate where in the app launcher custom tiles should now exist when you're using Feature Pack 1. I can give it an address that I want it to go to. So we can say go to ignite.microsoft.com. Unfortunately, what I should have done first was copy the icon URL, because it is required to have an icon. So let's just go back and reuse that icon. Again, Ignite, seventh in the order. We're going to go to ignite.microsoft.com. I'll give it an image. I can specify which audiences should see a tile as well. So let's say I want to show a tile to a specific audience within my organization. So I can actually do that with custom tiles. So custom tiles are actually flexible enough to where I could say I could create a group based on profile import. I could compile an audience, and let's say I call it HR. And members of that audience are members of a security group. Perhaps they all report to the same manager. But effectively, what I can do is actually create an audience, and then I can apply visibility of the tile to that specific audience. So it does give me some flexibility to really give users a dynamic experience. So everybody doesn't have to have that same app launcher menu that maybe has things that aren't relevant to their role. You can actually deliver tiles that are relevant to those users and their roles by virtue of audiences. I'll just give this tile to everybody. So now I have an Ignite tile, and it's going to take a while to come up because I would need to clear my cache in order to get it to show up. Let's see if just killing the browser and bringing it back will work. So I'm going to go ahead, come back. I'm going to log in as Garth again. And hopefully that sufficiently cleared out my cache. We'll give that another second to clear out. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk through a couple of demos. We're going to come back in just a minute to see if this shows up. So bear with me. It'll actually show up. There is some caching time that it takes to get there. I believe we can do it through developer tools if you know the command to do so.
I've got something ahead.
Okay. So great. So let's look at a couple of other things. I logged in as Garth. I'm going to go ahead and close the browser again and move on to the next menu before we come back to custom tiles. The other thing we talked about was the OneDrive for Business user experience. So we talked about custom tiles. You can now extend tiles inside of the app launcher for SharePoint Server 2016. You can make those tiles specific to an audience. You can apply your own images to them. You can reorder them in a way that makes sense to you. We're going to come back and look at our seventh tile as we work through these demos. Now I'm going to log in as Alex Darrow. Alex wants to use OneDrive for Business. Unfortunately, the OneDrive for Business user experience inside of SharePoint Server 2016 as it was shipped wasn't the greatest. It was based on the old MySite concept. It was based on the proprietary design of the SharePoint pages. It wasn't fast, it wasn't mobile, it wasn't responsive. With Feature Pack 1, we're giving you all that. So let's go ahead and go to OneDrive. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm moving over to a different web application. So I'm just going to log in as Garth or as Alex one more time. We're going to shift web applications. As you can see, we're now at onedrive.odsp.com.co. But as you can see, the new OneDrive experience in SharePoint Server 2016 is a lot different than the one that we actually shipped. I can view things now as tiles. I can view them as a list. You can see, because it's client-side, it's rendering fast. So when I switch back and forth, I can come back. I can sort by modified. I can come in now, and I can sort by file size inside of OneDrive for business. I can sort them descending. There's a number of different things I can do. Let's say I want information on the Northwind presentation. I can click on that. I get a toolbar available to me, but I also get the information pane. I can click on the information pane, which gives me a document preview based on running online Office Online server on premises. So as you can see, it also gives me recent activity right there in the information pane. And this is all on premises inside of Feature Pack 1. So now I can see who's created the document, who's modified the document. What does the sharing activity look like? If I want to share it very quickly with somebody, I can just click Add People. And I can get a link now on premises to share documents, something you haven't been able to do in the past. Most of you in the past have probably right-clicked on the document or copied the address out of your browser's address bar and sent it to somebody. Now I can go in and I can say, get a link. And I can copy that link and I can send that out. Or I can invite people. And I can invite Garth, for example, and quickly invite him and give him a set of permissions directly from the information panel. I also have more information about the file itself. So I can look into the size of the file's location, when the file was last modified. So all that information is available to me now in OneDrive for Business on premises inside of SharePoint Server 2016. I can also copy this file too. Very quickly through the command bar, I can say copy file. Where do I want to put it? I want to put it with shared with everyone, and I can just move the file that way. So I could copy a file. I could create a new folder directly from the information pane as well, and I could call this hello and create a new folder that quickly inside of OneDrive for Business with these new user experience investments we're shipping in Feature Pack 1. I could move the file if I opted to do so in a very similar fashion, and there's my hello folder that I created just a moment ago. I can also get a link from here, and I can open the file in one of two ways. It's also mobile friendly. So it's fast, it's responsive, it gives you a great set of capabilities, and it's mobile friendly. So that's the new OneDrive for Business user experience that's in Feature Pack 1. So what I can do now is we're just going to go back to our homepage and look at a couple of other things. So let's see if we got a tile yet. And there it is. So there's my Ignite tile. It actually exists now. It popped up. There it is, ordered on my toolbar. The reason it's not 7th for Alex is because Alex isn't configured for hybrid, so he only had 3 tiles available to him. So Contoso became the 4th and Ignite became the 5th. So you have to be intelligent about the way that you do those. I'm going to guess that your name's Francesco and you have a question for me over here. Are the custom tiles at the site collection level? No, the custom tiles are web app specific. So you create it at the root and then any site will be able to derive those tiles, I believe. So the next thing is probably your favorite, administrative action logging. So administrative action logging is another feature that's coming in Feature Pack 1. And what does it do? Again, it captures actions taken by an administrator against a SharePoint server farm. So you'll notice in monitoring, one of the new things after you have installed the features for Feature Pack 1 is you can look at diagnostic logging. Sorry. You can look at usage and health data collection, and one of the things that you're going to see now is a new option up at the top that says administrative actions. So you can toggle that on to begin to collect those administrative actions that were taken by an administrator within your SharePoint farm. Here's an example of which that I ran a couple of days ago. In order to support administrative action logging, we introduced a new PowerShell commandlet that'll be coming in Feature Pack 1 that's called merge SP usage log. And then you specify the identity, which is administrative actions. But as you can see here, I went ahead and ran merge SP usage log identity administrative actions. So that's what I'm looking for. And as you can see, it detected two administrative actions that were taken against my server farm. So what happened? A couple of different things happened. One, an individual was added to the farm administrators group. So you can see in the table down below, administration.security.userAdd. So a user was added to the farm administrators group, and the account password settings were modified as well. And this is just one of dozens and dozens of examples of the different things that we're able to capture now through administrative logging. So I can actually detect whether or not my administrator has went in and changed the password reset settings for my service accounts. I can go ahead and detect whether or not they added or removed somebody that was within the farm administrators group. So I can quickly run in, I can use pipelines and PowerShell, I can come in and say start time, starting on September 16th. I can run the command, and it'll return some of that information back to me. There's another way that you can do it as well. So the way that we recommend, the preferred method for obtaining administrative actions that occur within a farm is by using the PowerShell commandlet. The other way that you can do it is you can use Transact SQL, and you can actually query your usage DB. It's one of the few databases that we allow you to use Transact SQL against. So what you can do is you can actually interrogate all the partitions of your usage database to return the administrative actions. But we really wanted to simplify it for you and give you a more user-friendly way of determining what actions were taken. So this is the initial iteration of administrative action logging. It's all based on a set of PowerShell commandlets. We capture those actions, and then we make them available to you inside of SharePoint Server 2016. So you've got those available to you as well. Now, the other thing that I talked about is the hybrid auditing piece. So hybrid auditing is based on a capability that exists inside of SharePoint Server 2016 that many of you have seen and probably asked about on forums somewhere, is what is the SharePoint Insights service? When I look at services on server, there's this thing that says SharePoint Insights. Well, what is that? That's what drives, that's the service that actually drives what hybrid auditing is. So inside of Office 365 now, I can go in as Garth, the administrator for my tenancy, not the site collection administrator, and I can go to administration inside of Office 365. From there, I can actually go down to my compliance center. So as soon as I cancel this prompt that I knew was coming, we can go into the compliance center, and from within the compliance center itself, I can now detect the actions that were taken within my server farm environment through the Office 365 Protection Center. So we're just gonna come down and we're gonna go to Admin Centers, move down a little bit and go to Compliance. And then within the Compliance Center, we're gonna go to the Audit Log Search. So as soon as we're in the Compliance Center here momentarily, we're gonna work our way into Audit Log Search. So coming down, we can look at Search and Investigation. Sorry, coming down again. There it goes, finally showed up. So I can do an audit log search. I can search for all activities. I can specify a range. So I can say starting on in August, I'll just give it a random time, up until, scroll down a little bit so we can see that. Let's say up until a couple of days ago, give it a time and click search, and it's gonna load the results. And these results are gonna be based on activities that have transpired against sites and content in Office 365, as well as sites and content from SharePoint Server 2016. So what hybrid auditing enables me to do is really aggregate all of the activities that individuals have taken against content or authentication type actions against both my on-prem and Office 365 environments, and I can drop those right in here. So when those results load, we'll see that Garth has recently logged into on-prem. We'll see that Alex has recently logged into on-prem as well. So you can see a number of different actions that have occurred during the particular time frame where I interrogated it. The other great thing is, so I've got 150 results available to me, so I can work my way through here, and you can see that Garth had logged in. We can see that Garth had accessed a file. So if we look there at the second one down, we see file access. We also see that Garth requested a video, Garth previewed a file. So you can see all of those actions now. You never had that available to you inside of SharePoint in the past. We're making all those reports available to you via hybrid. The other thing I can do is look at the number of reports that are available now that you can use against activities inside of SharePoint Server 2016. So the beauty part about hybrid auditing is it gives you information that you've never had access to, but it does it in a way to where we can constantly deliver new reports to you without having to deliver to you a new feature pack or a new update because it's all cloud-based. So I'm going to go ahead and switch right back over to the slides real quick. So we saw a number of different things for Feature Pack 1, the new modern OneDrive for business user experience. We saw the custom tiles. We saw administrative action logging. And we talked a little bit about some of the hybrid auditing capabilities. So the four things we looked at inside of Feature Pack 1, but those aren't the only four things that are in Feature Pack 1. So now with the last 15 minutes of the session to go, let's talk a little bit about our release cadence. So I want to introduce Troy again to talk a little bit about not only where Feature Pack 1 came from, how do you get Feature Pack 1, but also what are Feature Pack's implications as we move forward.
Thanks a lot, Bill. All right, everybody hear me? Great. So as we mentioned in the beginning here, SharePoint 2016, we went to RTW in March. And since then, every month we've been releasing what we call PUs, or public updates. So those public updates are the main vehicle we're using to deliver you fixes and new functionality. Those updates are released monthly, and they are cumulative. So the update that we released in May will also be available in future PUs. So May is in June, May and June are in July, and so on. For security updates, we release them on an as-needed basis, as always. And then, as we kind of mentioned, I believe, at the May conference, we are still committed to on-prem. We are still doing major releases, and we've already started the work on planning the next major release. So you'll be seeing a new major release within the next 2 to 3 years. So in terms of the feature packs will actually be delivered via the public update mechanism. So we announced that Feature Pack 1 will be available in November. And what that means is when you install the November public update, you'll be getting that Feature Pack 1 functionality. We're also happy to announce that we have already planned for another Feature Pack, Feature Pack 2. That currently is scheduled to appear sometime in the second half of 2017. So we're looking forward to that. One other thing that's important to realize is that in this new model, SharePoint is no longer releasing service packs. So I know that some customers out there, they like to wait for, say, like that first service pack to appear to know that, oh, okay, SharePoint's now solid, we're now ready to deploy it. But we're not doing service packs anymore in SharePoint. It's all about public updates. But the great thing about it, as we mentioned earlier, is that now that SharePoint on-prem is based on that converged code base with the cloud, you have the reliability of the cloud on-prem. You have the knowledge that we are actually ready to go in production today using the SharePoint RTW bits. So if anybody's been waiting for Service Pack 1, don't wait any longer. Go ahead and start deploying today. Thanks.
Great. So for Feature Pack 1, the important things to take away from that is at a particular point in time in November, are you going to be able to go to the Microsoft Download Center and download an MSI called Feature Pack 1? No. Feature Pack is, as Troy said, it is based on our PU delivery vehicle, our public updates, which means we can dark deploy features into each subsequent public update, and at a given point in time, we can light them up for you, turn them on effectively. So the way that it works is they come through this public update vehicle, they arrive to you on premises, they've been arriving to you since you've been running 2016 and you didn't know it, and then there becomes a point in time that we call Feature Pack 1, which is when those features actually make themselves available. Some of the important things that we've done is, what if you don't want a feature? You can turn them on and off. So we're giving you, through PowerShell, the ability to toggle certain features on and off. The reason that's important is because, as Troy said, we're planning Feature Pack 2, where we anticipate doing more investment in the user experience beyond just OneDrive for a business to be representative of some of the things that we've done in the cloud. Well, you may want the ability to turn those things on and off to facilitate testing of your customizations, or perhaps to gradually allow users to adopt them. So you'll have the ability to toggle features as we introduce them through subsequent feature packs. So what does that mean for SharePoint Server 2016 and our feature pack story? It means that SharePoint's always up to date. As Troy said, the reason we don't need to do service packs is because SharePoint Server 2016 and the updates and everything that we do for it moving forward has already been tested by 165 million users inside of Office 365, which is much better than the dozens of testers that we used to have in the past. Now we have millions of individuals testing these features, testing the product inside of Office 365 before we bring it back to you on-prem. So it's always going to be the most current and secure version. We built it to support constant innovation. We built it to support our feature pack model so we can continue to innovate. So back in May, one of the key things that we said is SharePoint Server 2016 RTM isn't the end of the journey, it's the beginning of the journey. SharePoint Server 2016 RTM was a milestone. But now after that, we're going to continue to innovate against it, much like what you see occurring in Windows today. We're going to add new features and value and continue to do so over time. We're going to continue to support zero downtime patching and updates, so that's an important principle because we are delivering these features through an update vehicle. So the patching principles apply that Troy talked about. So now let's talk about cloud potential. So we've gone through crawl, and we've gone through walk, and now let's go into the run phase. So the important takeaways from the previous segment, feature pack one is chock full of capabilities, capabilities that you asked for, capabilities that we felt would be good for you, and capabilities we derived directly from the cloud, and that feature pack two is going to be ready for you in the second half of 2017. So we were ahead of schedule on the first one, and we're working fast on our second one. So in this section, talking about cloud potential is all about hybrid. So we're constantly innovating as well on the hybrid side. Why? Customers want flexibility. You have to support your on-premises customizations. Perhaps an equivalent doesn't exist in the cloud. You may have a footprint in remote locations that doesn't facilitate on-premises. There may be regulatory reasons. It may be manageability. So on the hybrid side, the way we look about think about hybrid is in the past, we used to look at hybrid as a migration strategy to get you to the cloud. Now we look at hybrid as a business value strategy to bring cloud innovation back to you. The way I always like to frame it is hybrid is designed to not bring your business to the cloud, but to bring the cloud to your business. A great example of which is you can leverage hybrid auditing, and it completely precludes any migration whatsoever. I don't have to migrate my data to Office 365 in order to view those activities. Hybrid auditing just sends the logs. Hybrid search, I don't have to send all my data to Office 365 to make it discoverable, I just have to send the indexed metadata. The way that I think about hybrid is there's a landscape of capabilities. It all starts with the app launcher, extensible both on-premises as well as in Office 365. I call that the app discovery layer. There's the applications itself themselves, OneDrive, Yammer, Sites, Office 365 Video. All of those can be implemented in a hybrid way. And then there's the data discovery or data management layer, and we have hybrid search. And now we have hybrid taxonomy, and we have hybrid auditing, all coming out in November. So November is your feature pack moment. You don't download a feature pack from anywhere. You'll be apprised of when the feature pack is available, what we call the feature pack, and then you can light up the features or turn them off as they make most sense to you. So we think SharePoint Server 2016 for both us as well as our customers is a new way to think about SharePoint. One, from day one, we said it was a foundational release. It's a foundational release because it was built for continuous innovation. Much in the same way that Windows 10 is built for continuous innovation, SharePoint Server 2016 is built for continuous innovation. Does that mean SharePoint Server 2016 is the last on-premises release of SharePoint? Absolutely not. SharePoint Server 2016 is not the end of SharePoint on-premises. We have plans for more on-premises SharePoint moving forward. And I know that's always the big question after every on-prem session. Is SharePoint on-prem dead? It's actually alive and well, as you can see. It was born in the cloud, as Troy said, but delivered on-premises, converged code base. We accrued not only all of our knowledge of running SharePoint at scale, but we turned that knowledge into code, gave it to you. Lastly, it's the most comprehensively validated and tested version to date of SharePoint. The reason is because it's tested by 165 million users that are touching SharePoint online at any given point in time, probably even more than that. So, SharePoint Server 2016, review and roadmap. We shipped SharePoint Server 2016 in March of 2016, on March 14th. We then delivered the April public update, the May public update, June, July, August, and subsequently September. So we've delivered a number of public updates to you, all of which being cumulative. The great part about those is there's been features that you've seen today through Feature Pack 1 that are in there, but they're not ready for you yet. We'll make sure you get those in November. That'll be our Feature Pack 1 moment. In between all of that, we also enabled 2016 in Azure VMs. And then when we get to the second half of 2017, we're going to do a Feature Pack 2 for you and deliver that one. That means you'll be getting the features incrementally over time, and then there's going to become a moment at some point in 2017 that we can turn them on. Now, the beauty part about us being able to dark deploy features to you through public updates is that we don't have to be constrained by a point in time. So we could make a decision to say October we'll turn the features on for you because they're ready in October. So the beauty is we can turn things on at a more flexible schedule than we've been able to do in the past. So with that said, we've got about 5 minutes left. I'm gonna stay for the next 5 minutes. I'm gonna leave Troy here, but I will promptly be gone to make my journey to the other side of the pond to do my next session. Please do evaluate this session. Hopefully it gave you some good information, some great demonstrations of what feature packs are, where they're coming from, when you can get them. The key message is cloud-born, future-proof, on-premise alive and well, and Feature Pack 1 will be coming in November. So thanks for your attendance.